Welcome to the 46th episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show. My name is Temma Frank, and I'm your host. I remember way back before the dawn of time when I was doing my MBA. Well, it wasn't quite before the dawn of time. It was in the mid-1980s. In those days, we did a lot of teamwork in our MBA program. And if you wanted a really strong team, you'd look for one person who was really, really good at math. I confess, that was not me. One who was really good at writing, that was me. One who was really good at presenting, I was pretty good at that too. And one who had a really artistic side and could put together really beautiful, impressive looking slides. I can't even remember, I don't think we even had PowerPoint yet. So putting together this really impressive looking presentation was something that even MBA students struggled to do. Well, now as young as kindergarten, kids are working on iPads and they are putting together beautiful presentations. It's become one of those essential skills that they learn pretty early. Today's guest, Colin Bram from a startup called Shobi, has developed what's basically an app for the iPad that makes it super easy for students to put together multimedia presentations and to send them to their teachers, and for their teachers to mark them and give feedback on them, both in writing and orally, if the teacher wants. It amazes me that there's this huge movement now in schools to move to iPads, but that is clearly what is happening. And it was interesting because Colin was commenting that partially it's because there's pressure coming both from the students themselves and from the teachers, which is a total shift because until now, teachers have typically been quite leery about bringing computers into the classroom. So there's a major shift going on, and this company is right at the beginning of that shift and filling a need that is just going to explode over the coming years. I'm adding a new feature to the podcast starting this week. At the end of the episode, I won't only talk about some of the key learnings from the interview, but I'm going to actually give you almost an assignment to suggest some activities or actions you can take that will help you put some of that learning into action. So stay tuned for that at the end of the interview. I hope you enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you afterwards.
My name is Colin Bram. I'm the CEO of Shobi, and Shobi is like a Dropbox for classrooms that are rolling out tablet devices like the iPad.
Okay.
And our product is an app that sits on those iPads, makes it really easy for students to submit work from thousands of creative apps. This allows them to send the work to their teacher, and their teacher can use the Shobi iPad app to effectively view the work and mark it up just like paper. We've also provided rich feedback tools like voice notes, which give the student and teacher the ability to authentically assess each other.
So why do they need this?
I think one of the things that our customers are trying to do with iPads are they're trying to engage students in learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that is to provide a new medium which to do the work of education, whether it be homework or schoolwork, or show what you know. And so the reason why Shobi exists is that it makes it much easier for that to happen in a digital format. So we're providing a really quick and easy way for students to create the videos, multimedia presentations, and different types of work on their iPad and get it to the teacher so that they can review it really easily without things like a huge email box with hundreds of emails from students.
Right.
And we're just trying to really make it easy for this new way of doing things to happen.
When I looked, for instance, at what my daughter has been doing, and now she's in university, but till last year was in high school, and they were increasingly, here in Alberta anyway, using the combination of Google Docs and School Zone. How would this be different from something like that?
I think we see that schools have a lot of systems in place, like learning management systems, collaboration solutions like email, and using things like cloud storage like Dropbox. So there's a whole bunch of ways in which you can cobble together a workflow.
Yep.
And the challenge in a classroom where you've got a teacher who, say it's a junior high or middle school teacher, and you're working with 100 students or more, it's a lot of work to cobble it all together.
Okay.
And so we looked at things like the number of steps that it takes for a teacher to really, just like they would have on a piece of paper, provide some written feedback to the student or mark up a paper.
Mm-hmm.
And once that goes digital, it turns out it's three or four times the number of steps
wow.
it takes to do something. This can take a teacher from spending 6 to 8 hours a week grading papers to somewhere around 20 or 25
And that
hours.
Should be less, not
it
more.
It should be way less.
Yeah.
So we just went, well, that's a ripe area to provide a solution. And, of course, because we're going to this cool new format, there's opportunities for new types of learning to happen. So if our product can make it easy, quick mm-hmm. and easy to do something, and hopefully provide some deeper educational value, that'd be a pretty cool thing to do.
Now, I'm thinking that usability here is going to be crucial, both usability from the viewpoint of the kids as well as the teachers, because I know a lot of teachers have been very shy about technology. So how have you approached the usability challenge?
You're right. One of the interesting things in this environment is that we've got very young kids using the product all the way up to a teacher who might be on the edge of retirement. So there's all sorts of different ages and different places in which Shobee is used now. And so we've tried to just make it as simple as possible. This has meant things like whenever we're like, no, we should add some bells and whistles to the product, more often than not we're saying, well, let's just try to keep it just like a folder type of system. So when a teacher enters Shobee, it's literally, let's create a class folder, mm-hmm. and we give it a name, and that's it. And then you go one level deeper and you create assignment folders. And it's just really simple, as if you're creating folders on a computer, which most people are familiar with doing, or you could compare it to file folders with paper,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have student birth dates or all sorts of health numbers or periphery information in there. It just really focuses on the collection of the work and the review of the work and providing really simple tools to do just that.
That's an interesting point, because I've certainly thought that having all the health information and all that kind of nonsense that the schools are still doing by paper, I don't understand why that isn't automated yet. I guess two questions. One is, from your expertise, why isn't that automated yet? And the other is, would including stuff like that not make it easier to sell to the school boards?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You know, on one hand, we could certainly extend something like Shobee, and we could add in ways in which you would track some of this other type of information. On the other hand, as we do that, it will probably become more difficult to use.
Mm-hmm.
So in this day and age, and I think where things are going progressively is more towards an app type of format,
mm-hmm.
where you have really easy to use individual apps, which have a key task in mind. So instead of having these large, historically we have large horizontal systems which mm-hmm. do all sorts of things for you, the problem with those is it takes people a long time to get trained up and mm-hmm. to use those. Rather, I think increasingly it's cool to be able to just download an app. In this case, it does, for teachers, this helps them mark and grade student papers. And, in days gone by, this type of activity would have been part of a system which also did this,
right.
this, and this. And so as a result, you'd have to have teachers in for a number of days for professional development to learn about
mm-hmm.
that entire huge system and getting everybody up to speed on it. Now something like Shobee, teachers actually are just downloading it,
mm-hmm.
and we talked a little bit about metrics before we started recording, but I know already today we've got almost 5,000 people that have mm-hmm. just automatically signed up and started using Shobee without any sort of professional development or training.
Where does revenue for you come in?
So we've got a revenue model which consists of a freemium approach where we have individual teachers and students who use a free edition of the product.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's premium features within the app which an individual teacher can pay for and upgrade their classroom to the Pro Edition.
And what sorts of things would be included in that aren't
so
in the
freemium? Pro Edition today includes in-app annotation capability, so the ability to actually write on student papers.
Okay.
That can be done using other types of apps where you can mark on top of a PDF file,
mm-hmm.
but keeping it really simple and inside of the app where you see your list of students and the work they've done just means it's going to cut out a few steps. So we've decided that that's one of the things that would be part of our Pro Edition. Larger multimedia sizes and file sizes, longer voice notes, these are all some of the features
okay.
that are part of our Pro Edition.
Okay.
Most of our actual revenue, though, comes from entire schools that are coming on board with the iPad. So our more popular Pro offering is that an entire school gets the Shobee Pro Edition. Their students, their teachers will all have those Pro capabilities. And with that, we also offer some professional development, which is delivered through webinar. So in order to make it cost-effective and very quick to deploy, we'll have schools that will have someone like myself be online for an hour in front of all of the teachers, and they all get up to speed all in one shot.
Where's your main market?
So the main markets are about 45% or so of our users are in the U.S., about 40% are in the U.K., and then there's a long tail of other countries that use Shobi afterwards. And most of the types of schools that are using Shobi are private and charter schools.
Okay.
Increasingly, what's kind of interesting is, I was just reading an article about this beforehand, is there's public school districts that are now buying iPads for students. And this is part of an evergreening movement towards, I suppose, the movement of laptops and desktop computers. They're not buying those for labs any longer. Rather, we're moving more towards using devices like the iPad in replacement of that prior medium. So having creative tools on those iPads, apps that students actually potentially write their papers or record them working on their lab bench, and having a place to actually submit that to their teacher is pretty important.
You mentioned that you have been very closely watching how people are using it and the numbers and stuff. What sort of data do you look at, and how does that feed into your business process and what you're doing with that data?
Yeah, good question. I think, for a lot of companies, they'll look at things like the number of users that they sign up to their product. They'll look at potentially the number of if it's a freemium business model, they might look at the number of people that are in the product using it for free versus the number of paid. I think the really interesting thing for us is a lot of our product development process is now driven by a different style of metrics. One is called funnel metrics. So you're looking at, in a given time range, say over a weekly period, what are the number of teachers that signed up to the product, the number of teachers that went on to the next step of setting up their first class, setting up their first assignment, all the way to the point of getting their first students onboarded. Mm-hmm. And so we've looked carefully at that, and some of our development activities this spring, instead of building new deep features in our product, actually we're entirely focused on taking something that looked like a scarecrow hat, inverted scarecrow hat, we were calling it.
Yeah.
Lots of people signing up for our product, but very few are actually getting to the point of using it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made it much more easier for folks that would sign up, teachers signed up, to actually get their classes starting to use the product.
Okay.
And that in itself has then now fed back, where we have a lot more people getting onto Shobi in the first place and telling their friends about it, their teacher friends, and it helps in kind of the self-proliferation of the product. So that's one of the types of metrics we look at.
So how have you promoted this product and made people aware of its existence?
There's some aspect early on in a lot of our marketing of Shobi, we were very intentional about going to conferences and trade shows. And I think one of the things that's actually really propelled us forward is more of that notion of kind of if you build it, they will come. Now, I know they always say do not.
Right.
That's the worst advice.
You're
going to be in the basement and no one ever is going to find you. But we've paid a lot of attention to ensuring that the early adopters of the product are very, very happy. And that's meant actually in the last 8 or 9 months, really just speaking to a relatively small group of people that are using the product but use it extremely heavily. So we're focused a lot on ensuring that many of these lead schools who are rolling out iPads, it is still a fairly niche thing.
Yes.
And so we have the opportunity to dialogue with a lot of the thought leaders, so to speak, who are leading this movement. And they're heavily driving what Shobi is and will be. And so, it's meant talking more closely with them, feeding that back into the product. They're the ones who go out and chat with other people. Now, this could be on Twitter. It could be at the conference, at tech type of conferences. But that has actually led to a lot of growth, where because we're part of a kind of an early adopter growing movement right now, and we're speaking to the right people in that movement, then they're backpacking us around with them, and that's leading to some pretty big growth in places that, frankly, we'll never have the ability to visit. So
right.
Now it'd be neat to go down to some of these places or across to these other places in the world, but having people who are close to the company, but it's an early-stage company, we can't afford to have a humongous sales staff. They are
right.
you know, the early spreaders of the good word of the product. So that's helped us out a lot.
What are some of the surprises that you got from that early adopter market about things you thought might work that they didn't like, or things you thought were irrelevant that they were excited about?
Probably the easiest thing that we encountered was that early on we didn't actually understand that the iPad was going to be as important in our growth as it was. So early on our product was almost entirely web-based, and we promoted that you could use it on the iPad if you so wished. But I think, you know, as we began getting several early adopters on board on the iPad, then they were speaking to us about the need for a native version of the app, and you know, we began to move our development in that direction.
Is it just because the iPad's cheaper that schools are going that way? Because I would have thought that something with a keyboard might make more sense for students. Why is the iPad becoming a core element there?
It's a good question. I think there's a number of other emerging devices as well, like Chromebooks, for example, which have a little bit of a less expensive price point, I think, than the iPad. But I think part of it's there's an interesting demographic thing about the iPad. One is, I think it's one of those types of devices that just crosses a lot of generational boundaries. So, you know, I know my parents have an iPad. I have an iPad. I have young children, and they are 3 years old and 1 year old, and they love the iPad.
Right.
And it just seems to be something that everybody gets. With things like, I think back to my early computing days, you know, kind of unless you had a PhD or, you know, years of experience, it was a device that had a heavy, you know, there's a heavy speed bump there to cross or to bounce over to get into the experience. The barrier to entry was high. And so I think that one of the reasons why the iPad has done so well is in previous technology pushes into schools, a lot of it's been kind of a top-down movement. We're going to buy smart boards for the classroom. And so teachers are told about this, and then they're instructed on how to use it after an installation is done. Versus with a lot of teachers that I talk to, they've used an iPad, they've bought it before, they use it in their personal life, and then they thought, wow, oh, you know, I have to use this laptop in my classroom to record my marks and grades. I wonder if there's a better way. How can I use this iPad in school? So it's almost a bottom-up movement.
Okay.
And then once you get those types of educators thinking that way, and then the students want to do that too, then there's this kind of this interesting place that almost, I can't think that this has happened in education before, but it's kind of like everybody's on board.
Yeah.
And, of course, you'll talk to different types of classrooms, like a lot of classrooms that I talk to who haven't got to this point yet go, no, there's no way this is ever going to happen. It doesn't make sense whatsoever. But then I talked to some of the types of classrooms that are now a year or two into this new movement, and there's no turning back. This is the way of the future. So from a early product company perspective, I think, you know, we're really focused on kind of thinking about where the future is going to be and how we'll meet it. And today we know that the market is still relatively in its infancy, but we're going to work as hard as we can to build along with those early customers to make sure that we are part of that larger future.
Who's the competition? What sort of competition do you have?
I think the largest competition right now is sort of these do-it-yourself type of solutions. So we've got a large number of schools that will have students sign up for Dropbox accounts and then use various apps that sync to shared Dropbox folders and have teachers mark up PDF files as a way to go paperless. And you know, what we're saying to schools with our product is that we've built a solution for that that's specific for kindergarten to grade 12. And, you know, with a few steps, a teacher's going to be able to just unlock that possibility without having to read a big instruction manual and, you know, a whole mess of steps in order to configure everybody's account and share folders online and things that perhaps as a business type of person you could do, but in a classroom with all kids running around and stuff, you just want it to work.
Right.
And so that's, you know, from a, I guess from a where you emerge as an early stage product company, it's a good place to be because we're taking something that is confusing and building a very tight integrated solution for that problem.
What's been the biggest challenge you've faced so far in building this and in creating this company? I don't mean necessarily building the product.
I think the company is a lot different than what I've experienced before. So my experience is to build a solution to a customer's problem, likely charge them for that to as a consulting type of revenue. And then once I've completed that job, then you take a portion of your retained earnings and then you would kind of invest it in future development efforts to build maybe a product, which is going to create some new revenue streams. The difference with this is that in a product-specific type of company, you've got an interesting play where there's a certain amount of time that we have to be in front of this market and to ride it all the way. Mm-hmm. So we know that there's a humongous number of iPads being purchased by schools right now, far more than we can onboard into Shobee. So really? What it necessitates is we need to get in front of this, build more things into our product, build it so it scales, build up our team so that we're able to provide ample customer support for the growing user base, have folks involved in talking to schools that are interested in our pro version of Shobee and educating them on why they might want to go with it. I guess what I'm relating to is that we need to have an investment style approach where we're investing in the future before it happens. And so it's a different setup than a consulting company.
And do you have investors?
We do. So we're just closing our first funding round right now.
Oh, exciting.
And nothing I can really announce yet, but okay. It's early, really early stage for us and pretty exciting stuff.
If you're a regular listener to this show, you've no doubt heard me harp on about the importance of usability and user testing, making things super easy to use. And there's no question that that has been one of the keys to the success of this product. But what I found especially interesting was his concept that we're moving away from big pieces of software that can do everything to much more modular types of software design, to essentially an app-based approach. So I can see, for instance, with an approach like his, they're starting with an app that focuses entirely on making it easy for the teachers and their students to communicate with each other. I can also see, though, where from a school's perspective, they would be interested in having some of the data that they've chosen to exclude from this app built in. So things like the students' birth dates, their allergies, stuff like that. His company didn't want to build that into the main app because it would make it too complex to learn. But I can certainly see where if you were to build in a modular way, you could do another app that plugs into this one that would handle those types of information. So the administrators would have a simple app that dealt with the types of information that they needed to input. The teachers would have a simple app that dealt with what they need. But anyone who wants at any time could potentially look up the other types of information. I think that's an interesting way of looking at things, and it may well be the way of software development going forward. I also thought that it was really interesting how their whole product has been shaped by early adopters. Their marketing is really being done for them by early adopters. So that's a really great strategy to think about. If you are creating something that's really new, and you don't have the money to do much in the way of marketing, get it into the hands of people who could really benefit from it and work like crazy to impress them, to give them everything they want and make them love the product so much that they will then go around telling everybody else about it. It's a great way to make sure you're developing a super fantastic product, and it's a great way to get the word out there. So how can you apply what we learned in this episode to your situation? I'd say there are a couple of things. First, get some people who are not familiar with your company or your website or your products to test it out and give you feedback. Better still, have someone other than you watch them work and ask them what they're experiencing as they're working through it. Because if it's you in there, they'll probably not want to hurt your feelings and you won't get the information you need. Second, if you've got a new product, look for who your early adopters have been and reach out to them. Phone them if you've got a phone number, if not, send them an email. Ask them what they like about it and what could be done better. Ask them about features that are missing or that are difficult to use. If your product or service has already been out there for a while, ask your heaviest users. And also ask folks who signed up or bought, but who haven't been using it, You need to know why. In fact, that last point applies even if it's a new product. If people are signing up and not using it, that's a clue that you've got a problem. Find out what it is. That's all for this week. I do hope that you will leave some feedback for me either on the website at frankonlinemarketing.com or by shooting me a quick email, Tema, T-E-M-A, at frankonlinemarketing.com. Or alternatively, you can always leave a voice message through the website or on my toll-free line, which is 1-866-544-9262. If you're enjoying the show, please would you head over to iTunes and give it a quick review. It would really help if other people could find out about it too. And if that's too complicated for you, why don't you just go ahead and tweet or Facebook share this page with people you know who you think might actually enjoy listening to the show. Thanks for spreading the love, and I will chat with you next week.